some extent were called Sefer Torah. And I want to start with three historical lectures so that we can put ourselves in the appropriate framework. And the three things that I want to discuss tonight, I would like to discuss the alphabet, the actual script in which the Torah is currently written. Then next week in Yetzer Hashem, I'd like to discuss the issue of the integrity of the text. How does the Torah, as we have it, either in the Ashkenazic version or in the Sephardic version or in the Yemenite version, compare with the Sifrei Torah that existed, say, at the time of the Gemara? And the third is, I would like to see what we can say about the mysterious problem of how the whole business of Kriyat HaTorah got started and got organized. And on all of these things, they're decreasing in the order that I'm describing, decreasing amounts of unanimity amongst the various scholars. But we'll be able to, I think, say something on all of those topics. So I first want to start with the issue of the nature of the alphabet as we have it. And on this, there are many, four or five sources in the Gemara and in the Yerushalmi, which deal with two issues, the so-called Ktav Ivri and Ktav Ashuri, that is, the transition from the old Hebrew text into the modern text, and secondly, the issue of the five discrepancies between medial letters and final letters. So I propose that we first simply go through, they're not terribly long, that we first go through all of the texts that we have in the Babli and the Yerushalmi relating to these issues. So the first is, so you all have the text that we'll be studying. The first begins with, I'm reading from the Gemara Sanhedrin. Amar mar zutva, v'item amar ukva, b'tchila nitna Torah l'Yisrael b'ktav ivri v'lashon hakodesh. Originally, the Torah was given in the Hebrew script and the Hebrew language. Chazra v'nitna lahem b'mei Ezra b'ktav ashurit v'lashon arami. It was given a second time in the time of Ezra in Assyrian script and Aramaic language. Biru lehen liYisrael ktav ashurit v'lashon hakodesh. The Bnei Yisrael chose the Assyrian script and the Hebrew language. Behenichu lehedyotot ktav ivrit v'lashon arami, and left the opposite two choices, namely the old Hebrew script and the Aramaic language, to the lower classes, to the lower populace. Ktav Erit, okay, man hediotot, who are these hediotot? Amar Rav Chista Kutai, that it refers to the Samaritans.
They took the Aramaic.
They took the Aramaic language and the original Hebrew script. Okay? My Ktav Ivrit, what does the phrase Ktav Ivrit mean? What is this Hebrew language referring to? Amar Rav Chista Ktav Libuna. It is the Libuna script. What does the word Libuna mean? We're not sure. There are various interpretations in the Rishonim, in Rashi and Tosfos, as to what Libuna means. I brought Rashi's interpretation, large letters, and Tosfos interprets it to mean the letters of a particular district, whether Lebanon or something else. The simplest interpretation from simply the word, from the etymology of Libuna, is that it means cuneiform, that is, something that was written on bricks. None of these meanings, interpretations of the word Libuna, is correct. So if you want to see what the original Hebrew script looked like, this is simply from the Jewish Encyclopedia. We can pass this around. Here is the alphabet in the original Hebrew script. We have enough archaeological material dating from, well, you see 1000 BCE all the way down to almost the 2nd century BCE. And there you see on these various lines, marked 1 through 13, different versions of what the original Hebrew script looked like. For example, we have the Misha Melech Moav tablet, which was a fairly long tablet written in Moavit, in Moabite language, but Moabite, which is not quite Hebrew, but it's so close to Hebrew, that had it been written in the current script, you would have no difficulty understanding every single word. However, if you actually stared at the tablet the way it exists, unless you were a trained archaeologist or actually had learned these letters, you would not be able to read it. Similarly, for example, the inscription on the Shiloach from the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, if it were translated and transcribed into modern Hebrew letters, nobody in this table would have any trouble understanding exactly what it says. But if you were faced with that inscription and weren't a trained archaeologist and knew the letters, you would not be able to read a single word. But what the Gemara is referring to, even though they don't understand in the discussion, perhaps if the word libuna we do not have a good accurate translation of, by the time of the Gemara, the existence of this original Hebrew script had been forgotten, so they didn't really know what it meant. Originally, there was this tradition, which has been verified over and over again by the archaeological evidence, that the original Hebrew script was entirely different from our square script in which the Sefer Torah is written today. And as you can see, I don't think if I picked out a single letter in one of these columns that you'd be able to actually identify it if you didn't have the table on top to pick out the letter to tell you what it was. So there was a transition at some time from an original Hebrew script in which all of the Sifrei HaKodesh were written to the modern, present-day Hebrew script, which the Gemara calls Ksav Ashuri. The word Ashuri is not too unfortunate. We'll see exactly where this script comes from, but there was a really major reform that took place. That is, one alphabet had been replaced by another.
Well, that's a gradual.
It was not gradual. This was not gradual. This was a change. We can more or less date the change at somewhere between the 3rd century and the 2nd century. So therefore the Gemara's referring this change to Ezra is also historically incorrect. In other words, all extant manuscripts of Kitvei HaKodesh or anything else for that matter written before the 4th or the 5th century which were written in the Hebrew language were written in the original Hebrew script.
So that was next to the Aron Kodesh was put aside on the side of it. That was not the that's not the same Torah we have.
The Sefer Torah may have been the same, but the script was entirely different. To understand that this is a really serious problem, just imagine that you would like to introduce a reform today. To say that the Hebrew characters in the kitchen, you find some chairs. Imagine that you would introduce a reform today saying that all letters of the Hebrew alphabet should be replaced by the English alphabet. It would be the same Sefer Torah, except an Aleph would be replaced by an A, a Bet would be replaced by a B, and so on. Right? Just try to do it. I mean, try to institute that kind of a major reform.
Was this similar development in the countries, in the island, Moab, and
Let me perhaps say what went on here historically, but perhaps we should first go through the Gemara. But I'm simply emphasizing that a drastic change took place somewhere between the 3rd and the 2nd century. We have historical cases where such changes were taking place on the basis of very definite political moves. Like, for example, in this century, in Turkey, the transition from the original Turkish script to the Latin, to the European alphabet was a decided move, a political decision by Ataturk, basically to get away from the Muslim religion. So it was and to identify Turkey with Europe rather than with Asia. So at that particular juncture, there was a definite, we understand the political motivation of what took place. Here, we know that something very similar happened. We don't know precisely when it happened, but the transition was relatively sudden on the timescale that we're talking about. That is, before the 3rd century BC, you practically had nothing written in the current square Hebrew script, and after the 2nd century, practically all the Kitvei HaKodesh, with some exceptions, were written in the modern Hebrew, what's called Hebrew script. The English scholars, the modern scholars, use slightly different names. Where the Gemara calls Kitav Ivri and Kitav Ashuri, the modern scholars talk about Hebrew script as referring to the original Hebrew script, and Jewish script to referring to the square characters that we all learn in school today. Let's read a little bit further in the Gemara, and then I'll come back to Dr. Kanan's question.
So this is Kitav Levana, this one?
Yes.
One or all of them?
Yeah, they're all different versions. They don't differ that much from the other, one another, but they are all versions of the original Hebrew script, which looks nothing like, or doesn't look too much like ours. Okay? But remember, the Gemara is going to have a problem with this, right? Okay. And they attribute this change all the way back to Ezra, which, as I said, is historically not correct. Tanya Rav Yossi Omer, Ra'uy haya Ezra shitinaten Torah al Yadol Yisrael, ilmalei lo kadmon Moshe. Ezra was fitting, it would be fitting that Ezra should have given the whole Torah to Israel if Moshe had not preceded him. But Moshe mahu Omer, Moshe ala Elohim, ve'ezra Omer hu Ezra ala mibada. Ma aliyah amura kan Torah, af aliyah amura lahalan Torah. In both cases, the rephrase of aliyah refers to Israel. The Moshe hu Omer ve'oti tziva Hashem be'et ha'it lalamed etchem kukim u'mishpatim. Ezra Omer ki Ezra hichin levavol lidrosh et Torah Hashem v'lasot v'lalamed b'Yisrael chok u'mishpat. Even though Ezra did not have the merit to actually give the Torah, the script was changed. Ktav HaNishtavun is, of course, a phrase from a pasuk in Ezra, but the pasuk in Ezra really has nothing, that they're referring to here, really has nothing to do with a Sefer Torah. Rather, let me read you the whole passage. Vayishmu'u tzarei Yehuda uvinyamin, ki alu ki b'nei ha-gola bonim heichal Hashem Elokei Yisrael. The various enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the Jews who had recently re-arrived from Babylon planned to build the Beit HaMikdash. Vayikshu el Zerubbabel v'roshei ha'avot v'yamru lahem nivnei machem ki kachem nidrosh le'elohechem. Let us participate in this building of the second temple, because we also worship your gods. V'lo anachnu zavchim mimei asah hadon melech ashur ha'male otanu po. We have been worshiping your God from the time that the king Asah Hadan of Assyria imported us here. Vayom alehem was Zerubbabel, v'Yeshua, u'shar roshei ha'avot v'Yisrael, lo lachem v'lanu livnot v'ayit le'eloheinu. It's not for you to join us in the building of this house to our God. Ki anachnu yachad nivne l'Hashem Elokei Yisrael. We together, that is, we alone together, the Jews, as opposed to you, will build this to Akasher tzivanu ha'melech Korash melech Paras, as was commanded to us by the King Cyrus of Persia. The various countryside people were bickering with or hindering the hands of the residents of Judah, preventing them from doing the building. And they would hire lobbyists to undo their plans all the time of Cyrus and the king, and through the kingdom of Darius. ומלכות אחשוורוש בתחילת מלכותו, and that the kingdom of Artaxerxes in the beginning of his kingdom כתבו סתנה על יושבי יהודה וירושלים. They wrote an anti-Semitic tract against the citizens of Judah and Jerusalem. ובימי ארתחשתא כתב בשלום מטרדת תבל ושאר כנותיו על ארתחשתא מלך פרס, וכתב הנשתבון כתוב ארמית ומתורגם ארמית. So this phrase, וכתב הנשתנון, נשתבון, refers indeed to the missive that was sent by the enemies of the Jewish people to the central authorities, written in Aramaic and expressed in Aramaic.
And that was written in Ashur, in Babylonia.
No, this was a missive written from the anti-Jewish settlers in Samaria against the Jews to the central authorities in Persia. Okay?
Are you questioning whether that script was developed in Babylonia, or it's questioning when it came back by Hillel or Ezra?
Let me come to the history of the script in a moment. We know precisely what happened. We know what happened. This is one of the areas in which the last 60 or 70 years of archaeology has completely clarified the situation. The last time we studied the subject, if you recall, we mentioned an article by Torchina in which he dealt with the problem of the Mansapak. We'll review his guesses in 1939, and 4 out of 5 of his guesses were completely verified, and the 5th one may or may not be correct, but probably isn't. But we will come to all of that. The point of all of this discussion is that the Gemara has a difficult time arranging itself with the idea that there was this sudden change in the script. And in fact, if you read further in the Talmud, they deny that there was such a change altogether. Some of the Tanoim simply say that the Torah was originally given in the square script that we have today, and then it may have changed, but then it changed back, and so on. So what we're dealing here with is, in the Gemara, some problem of how to handle a tradition. They knew that there was a different script earlier. They couldn't imagine how it possibly could have been changed. And we today, some 2,400 years, or how many it is, 2,100 years later, also have a difficult time imagining how such a drastic change could have taken place. But we can pinpoint the time. It was between the 300 BC and the present. Okay, let's go to the next place in the Gemara which mentions this is on my second page of the handout. Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shlosha Nevi'im Alu Imahem Min HaGola. There were 3 prophets who came with the children of Israel back from the exile. Echad She'id Lahem Al HaMizbeach, one who told them where to pinpoint the position of the altar, the shape of the altar. Echad She'id Lahem Al Makom HaMizbeach. The achad shehid lehem shemakrivin afal pi she'ein bayit, that you can bring the sacrifices even though the Beit HaMikdash has not been reconstructed. Matnita tano Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov omer shalosh nev shloshan aviyim alu ehem en adwala, achad shehid lehem al ha-mizbeach ve'al makom ha-mizbeach, the shape and the location of the mizbeach, ve'achad shehid lehem shemakrivin afal pi she'ein bayit, ve'achad shehid lehem al ha-torah shetikatev ashuri. So this was a prophet coming back from the exile, telling them to change to the square script. Okay? The Talmud Yerushalmi in the Masechet Megillah, and my next selection here says, Ashuri yesh lo ktav v'ein lo lashon, Ivri yesh lo lashon v'ein lo ktav, bachru lahem ktav Ashuri v'lashon Ivri. Ashuri, remember, refers to our current square script. That it is a pleasant or sustainable or happy script. Because they derived, they brought this back with them from the exile in Ashur. And then it's Tani Rab Yossi Yomei Ra'ui Haya Ezra Shetinaten Torah Al Yado Ela Shekidvelu David Dor Moshe, Afal Pi Shelo Nitna Torah Al Yado, Afal Pi Shenitein Ktav HaLashon Al Yado, V'Ktav HaNishtavun, Ktatuv Aramit U'Mutur Gam Aramit. V'Lo Ka'alein Kitfo L'Mikri Malamit, Okay, Malamit Shebo B'Yom Niten. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Bora Atz Nitna Torah,
ואי תקרא רבי יוסף רבי ימי השורת ניתנה התורה וכשחתכו נהפכו להם לרועץ וכשחזכו בימי עזרה נהפן לאשורית כמה היום מגיד משנה שיבת לך etc. etc. So that therefore, again, there's a debate amongst the Tanoim here as to whether this Ktav Ashurit was the original form in which the Torah was given, or was it modified. Again, La'amudim, Amar Rabbi Levi, Man the Amar Lo Ro'etz Netanoa Ayin Ma'aseh Nisim, that the Ayin was a miracle because it actually represented a closed circle. Mandi Amar Ashuri Netanat Torah Samach Ma'aseh Nisim, that the Samach is a closed circle and therefore it could not sustain itself if it went all the way through the Luchot. We have Yomim B'Shem Rukiah B'Rabba B'Simon Tovainon Torah Rishonim Lo Haya Lahem Lo Mem Lo Heisha Lahem V'Lo Mem Shalahem Satum HaSamach Satum. In the original books of the Torah, neither the Mem nor the He was closed. Now, we have a closed mem on occasion, we have no closed hey, but the samach was closed. What does this mean?
Yeah, all of the drashim and all that came out, but how the samach existed.
Okay. What you're referring to is the following Gemara. This is Gemara on Shabbos. So now I want to move on to the second issue, namely the five letters, which have a different shape in final form than in initial form. The Amar of Chista, mem v'samach shebeluchot, the mem and the samach that were in the Luchot Avim b'neis hayu amdim.
So now
the Amar Rabbi Yirmi, I'm skipping a bit, the Itamar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Mansapach, the five letters which have a different final character to the original character, Sofum Amuri. Sofim Amuri Amrum. These were prescribed, the differences between the five final letters and the five medial letters were prescribed by the Tzofim. Literally, Tzofim presumably means prophets, although we'll see that it may not necessarily have that meaning. The Tizbara, how is it possible that a ruling to write the five terminal letters differently than the five medial letters could have been prescribed by prophetic decree? V'hachtiv eila ha-mitzvot she'ein ha-navir v'sha'il ha-chadesh davar mi'ata, that the prophet does not have the right to institute a reform, so how could they possibly have made this change? Ella mi'ava havoi, they knew that they were two different forms. Lo haviyad in hai ve'emtza teiva v'hai besofa teiva, but they didn't know whether the elongated nun, for example, comes at the end of the letter or at the beginning of the letter. They knew that there were two different types of nun, but they didn't know where each one belonged. The atu tzofim teknenim. The tzofim came and gave them instruction as to put the elongated nun at the end of the letter and the curved nun in the middle of the letter, for example. Va'akati eila ha-mitzvot she'ein ha-navir u'sha'il ha-chadesh davar me'ata. We are still faced with the problem that a prophet doesn't have the right to institute create a reform, such as deciding where the long letters goes and where the curved letters go. The prophet, just as he doesn't have the right to invent these two types of letters, also doesn't have the right to decide where one goes and the other goes. Ella, the Gemara says, shachachum v'chazru v'yasdu, that they originally knew where these letters were to go, and then somehow or other mysteriously they forgot this particular piece of information, something that every school child learns in the first and second grade, and anyone who looks in a Sefer Torah once should know, and then they came back and reinstituted the original plan. So this part, this Gemara certainly sounds extremely difficult. What does it mean, shachachum v'chazru v'yasdu? How could they forget? Does that mean that there was a period of time in which there were no Torah scrolls at all that anybody could look in? If so, how did they rewrite the whole Torah?
How did they find, they rediscovered the sacred Dvarim in time of Ezra? It also was completely forgotten.
We don't know what was, it may have been forgotten. So you're trying to say that at some time
all of the Torah scrolls had disappeared.
Or some of them,
and then they reinstituted them.
Okay.
We will try to explain exactly what this Gemara means also, but I just want to place all the puzzles on the table before we get into the interpretation. So first of all, we see that there was a transition from an entirely different script to our current script. Secondly, we see that there was some confusion about the difference between the media letters and the final letters, the five letters. And the Gemara's resolution of this was that this somehow was a reinstitution at some juncture. It doesn't tell us when this reinstitution took place. It just refers to them as Tzofim. And Tzofim isn't precisely Nevi'im. Tzofim is a mysterious word which presumably comes from an acrostic. That is, presumably the way to remember the Mem Nun Sadek Fechaf is Min Tzofecha. And therefore, it sort of was then interpreted as coming from the Tzofim. After all, the Chaf is out of place if they wanted to put these letters in order. We should have the Chaf first, and then the next four. So, Mansapach, or Min Tzofecha, was then interpreted to mean from the Tzofim, and then the issue is, what does the word Tzofim mean? Okay? ואמר רב יומי אבי תמר בחיר ואבא מנצבח צופים ארום ותספו אבכתיב אלו המצוות שאין אבי רשאי לחדש דבר מיתר ועוד אמר חסד המם ושמח שבלוחות בנס היו עומדים אי, אין, מי החבבוי ולא הווי ידעו חי באמצע הטבע ססם קוד והיו עשו צופים ותקנו פתוחים באמצע הטבע וסתובים בסוף הטבע סוף סוף אלו המצוות שאין אבי עתיד לחדש דבר מיתר אלו שכחום כחזרו ויסדות The Yerushalmi Talmud has a rather different version of this, which is interesting and instructive. Rav Matya ben Cheresh Almer, Mansafach, these five letters, Halachol Moshi, Meshai Misina. That this actually is an ancient tradition. This is not an innovation. Mahu Mansafach. Rabbi Yirmiyah b'shem of Shmuel Rabbi Yitzchak ma she'etchinu lecha ha-tzofim. This was instituted by the tzofim, by the seers. Man inun ilein tzofim. Who are these tzofim? Ma'aseh b'yom sagrir shelo nechnesu chachamim lebeit ha-vaad. There was bad weather and the rabbis decided not to go in for the meeting of the Beit HaVad, of the court or the assembly. V'nechnesu ha-tinokot. And the children decided to make a play meeting of the court instead of the rabbanim. They were going to play act of being rabbanim. V'nechnesu ha-tinokot. Amrin itun na'vid beit vada. De lo yivater. That they should not go to waste. Let's do our own assembly here today. Amon man dein dechtiv mem mem nun nun tzadi tzadi pei pei kaf kaf. Why are these five letters repeated? Mi ma'amar la ma'amar, mi ne'eman la ne'eman, mi tzadik la tzadik, mi per la per, mi kaf yado shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, la kaf yado shel Moshe. That this had an ancient transition tradition that goes all the way back to the time of Moshe. V'simun otan chachamim v'yamdu kulam b'nei adam gedolim. And all of these children grew up to be great scholars. I'm going to be Lezer, Rabbi Yoshua Havaminhon, Rabbi Yom HaGashem Uchir, Rabbi Simon, Rabbi Yom, Torah Roshonim. In the old Sifrei Torah, lo haya lo hei shalahem, velo mem shalahem satum. Neither the hey nor their mem was a closed letter. Hasamach satum. Rabbi Simon, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Amru, Anshe Yerushalayim hayu kotvim Yerushalayim Yerushalayim avalo hayu makpidim. They would write Yerushalayim with the final mem as an open letter. That's probably the interpretation of this. Not that they added a hey, but that they simply wrote the final mem as an open letter. V'dekavatei tzafon tzafona teman temana. Yudgimel davar shinu chachamim letalmai hamelech katvu lehem elokim baram reshit asa adam betzalem udmut zachar zachar v'nekeva etc. baram. That's all of this is for, we'll discuss in detail next week, I hope. But I'm just pointing out that there's a slightly different tradition here as to the development or the explanation of the phrase Manzapach, and definite evidence that there were ancient scrolls or other scrolls, the Anshei Yerushalayim, in which the final mem was not written as a closed letter, but was written as an open letter. And we'll see some examples of that in a moment, too. Okay? Now, what do we know about the history of the alphabet? And how does this all come in to this story? There is one common source for all alphabets. All alphabetic writing all over the world stems from one original source. The Latin alphabet, the Russian alphabet, the Arabic alphabet, the Ethiopian alphabet, the modern Hebrew alphabet, the Greek alphabet, all of them, in fact, have an original source. And what's pretty amazing about this original source is that whereas I don't think any of you, unless you were trained, could read any of the letters in the ancient Hebrew alphabet, I'm going to show you the original source, and you'll be able to read absolutely, once you get the clue, a whole word. Okay? What was the idea of the alphabet? The idea of the alphabet was to use the initial sound of some letter as a sign for the consonant representing that letter. So Aleph, for example, would be standing for an ox, the head of an ox, for instance. And therefore, if you drew something that schematically looked like the head of an ox, that would stand for an Aleph. A Bet was a house, for example. And therefore, any word, any time that you needed to have the consonant B or Bet, you would simply draw a little picture of the house, and then you would know that the thing was...
A graphically friendly user interface,
and we will see how friendly it was when it comes to reading, but not so much to writing, as we'll see in a minute. A lamed simply meant a shepherd's crook. So therefore, anytime you wanted to have the L sound, you would simply draw a picture of a shepherd's crook. An ayin meant an eye.
Chinese?
Chinese. Chinese and Japanese are much more complicated.
Yeah, don't say about 2,000. So.
Yeah, because they have, in Chinese, there are ideograms, and in Japanese, only in the more modern kana form do you have syllabic writing. But this is a major invention, namely one of the major inventions of mankind, to replace ideogram writing and cuneiform writing by this simple device. Now, the first place that this was discovered was in Sarabit al-Khadam. Let me tell you the story of Sarabit al-Khadam. That was the Egyptians needed turquoise for their religious purposes. And turquoise fades after every so often 50 or 60 years. So they would send a mining expedition out to the Sinai Desert. And the heads of the expedition were all Egyptians, but the slave workers were all Semitic tribesmen, maybe our relatives or forefathers. And what you see is that every time they would finish this expedition, they would erect a stele and maybe also a statue, and have a whole lot of inscriptions in hieroglyphics. But the workers would sometimes inscribe some graffiti in this Proto-Sinaitic language. This was first discovered by Petrie at the very beginning of the century, and the clue to understanding it was about 10 years later. Then, some years after that, they discovered that this really originated in Canaanite, in Canaan, so that therefore the source of all alphabets is the Proto-Canaanite script or the Proto-Sinaitic script. Now, I'm going to pass out a completely illegal thing, but a Xerox of about a third of a book on the alphabet written in Hebrew. And we'll go through many of the letters, but what I want you to do is simply open up to this page. On this page, you have a picture of an idol. With an inscription on it. I just want you to look at the bottom inscription reading from left to right. So I'm asking us, what we're going to do is read that. And you'll see how easy it is, because I've given you all the letters except the last one. The last one is a cross. And across, the word for cross is tav, so that's a tav. Okay? Now we're reading from left to right. The first, at the extreme right, you have a crook, which is a lamed. Then the next is a little house, which is a bet. The next is clearly an eye, which is an ayin. The next is another crook, slightly differently oriented, which is another lamed. And then a tav, lit ba'alat, to the lady, to the mistress. Okay.
What's the first one there that's shaped like a shape?
That's a mem. That's somebody's initial. I don't know who it was. People inscribe their initial and it's going to be very hard.
No, I mean in the first, on the bottom line that looks like a reverse shin.
That's a lama. Oh,
that's a lama, no.
That's a crook. That's a shepherd's crook.
So what's the next two?
The one after the lamed is a house. Then an eye, it's an eye, and then another lamed, just slightly differently oriented. And then a cross, which is a tav. So this is lib ba'alat. There's no trouble reading this stuff, you see, because
The language is the Canaanite language in Egypt.
These were the workers. They were these were Semitic tribes speaking some form of Semitic language, like Hebrew or some antecedent of Hebrew or some offshoot of Hebrew or maybe even Hebrew itself.
What's the date on this?
This is, I don't know, something like 1900, 1700 BC, something like that. Maybe 1600 BC, certainly around the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim, maybe a little bit before. Okay. Now, the problem with this is if you draw each one of these as clearly as this was drawn, we have no trouble reading it. The problem, of course, is writing it. If you have to actually write a lot of things, then it becomes necessary to relax the idea that the picture is clearly visible and have something which is more stylized. But all letters, all alphabets, everywhere in the world today develop out of these little initial pictograms.
How is cuneiform different than this?
Cuneiform looks entirely different. Cuneiform are little wedge-shaped things.
Are they also pictures depicting something?
It's a completely different system. It's more of a syllabic system, first of all, but more to the point, it's only convenient for writing in bricks. This is something which is convenient in scratching the stone like you have here, but also in writing with ink on paper or parchment. So this is the origin of all scripts. Okay? We happy with that. The actual family tree is now here. So, first of all, okay, so here is the family tree. We can pass this out and we can see how all languages develop. There's one case. Oh, excuse me. First, let's pass out the family tree. And here is, if you want, the Proto-Canaanite alphabet. Okay?
The fact that it's left to right here as opposed to right to left.
That was only fixed later. As you know, some languages to this day are from right to left and from left to right. And in those days, they even would write them sometimes up, down, or sometimes even around, right to the left and coming back from left to the right. So it was a continuous snake-like script. Okay?
That's like parabola. Right in the circle.
All right, so let's briefly look at this chart. If we look at this chart, the original beginnings are the Proto-Canaanite inscriptions. And This branched off into Proto-Arabic and Archaic Greek at around 1100 BC, where it sort of was the Phoenician version of the Proto-Canaanite script, which branched off into Archaic Greek, which eventually branched off into the Latin alphabet that we have in English today and the Greek alphabet. Okay. A little bit later, at around 800 or 900 BC, according to whatever evidence we have, the original Hebrew script, the Ktav Levunah, the Ktav Ivri, that you were unable to read in the first thing that I passed around, branched off from this main branch. And at the same time, Aramaic branched off, maybe a bit later. Okay? Now let's pause for a moment to discuss...
What are the interruptions in the line?
Well, they don't quite know the continuity between the ancient Hebrew script and the modern-day Samaritan script. Anyone who can read the ancient Hebrew script can read the modern-day Samaritan script, and vice versa, but they don't have a continuous family of documents which can trace that precisely. That's the meaning of the broken line.
And which script is this?
That's all the way at the bottom.
That's Proto-Canaanite?
That's Proto-Canaanite. They're not alphabetic. They're syllabic or... Well, I don't know where they got those from. Okay. All right. At any rate, we have this branch. Okay? Now, Aramaic branched off at around 750 or what have you BC. Okay? And now we have to say something about Aramaic. Aramaic, for a period of all of these years, from about 700 BC until about 300 BC, that is, from the time of that branching off until the Greek invasion, until Alexander conquered the Middle East, Aramaic was the official language. It was the standard language. All official documents were written in Aramaic. The lingua franca, or the English of today. What is English today and what was lingua franca maybe 200 years ago, and what was Latin to all scholars 500 or 600 years ago, the official language of from about whatever it is, 700 and something BC, all the way down to the conquest of Alexander, was Aramaic, which meant that all official documents were written in Aramaic, and that's the true meaning of that passage in Nehemiah that we just read. All official documents are written in Aramaic. Most everybody spoke Aramaic as a second language, just like most everybody who has to do business today anywhere in the world speaks English as a second language, if not as a first language. So that was the common writing. Everybody knew how to write Aramaic if they had to do anything. So therefore, the Jews who were part of the Middle Eastern world also knew how to write Aramaic and wrote in Aramaic. So therefore, official documents which were written in the Aramaic language we will find in Jewish, even if they were written by Jews, were written in the Aramaic script. And the old Hebrew documents which were written in the original Hebrew script. Okay. Now we come to the conquest of the region by Alexander. Aramaic is no longer the official language. The official language is Greek. But people spoke Aramaic. So whereas during this whole long period where there was sort of a uniform administration ranging all the way from Persia through to Eastern Africa and Asia Minor, there was one common official language. The entire script, Aramaic script, if it developed at all, developed uniformly throughout this region because everybody was in contact with one another. They all had to write to one another, and therefore there was a, more or less a common script. At the time of the Greek conquest, when Greek was no longer, when Aramaic was no longer the official language, this uniformity broke down. That is, people continued to speak Aramaic, but they no longer had to communicate in Aramaic as far as their official documents were concerned to other people. Therefore, at that point, if you take a look at this point in the map, in this particular chart, you'll see that the uniform Aramaic script broke up into 1, 2, 3, 4 pieces, of which one developed into a peculiarly Jewish script. So what the Gemara calls Kitav Ashuri, our current square script, and what the modern philologists call Jewish script, which is the same thing, evolved from the time that Aramaic was no longer the official language, and it became slightly different from the other evolutions of this same script. So therefore, for example, by modern times, the Jewish script and the Syriac script are quite different, and it's certainly very, very different from the Arabic script. Okay? But what happened, of course, is that it then became a particularly Jewish script, even though the language was uniform, that is, everybody was speaking Aramaic until the Arab conquest in that region, the scripts were national and different. Yes?
You mentioned that was Alexander the Great at the time. So where is the Greek influence on these scripts?
There's no Greek influence on these scripts. These are local national scripts. All I'm saying, the one thing that the Greek influence did was to destroy the uniformity of the development of the Aramaic script. In other words, these scripts, up and from about, if you look on the chart, from about 700 BC till about 200 BC, whatever changes took place in these scripts took place uniformly across the entire